Welcome back to the Modern Spirit Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Joe Taffer. On this episode number 18, we are interviewing my friend and colleague, Chamonix Jain, PhD. Dr. Chamonix Jain is the founder and CEO of the Consciousness and Healing Initiative, CHI, a collaborative accelerator that facilitates the transdisciplinary science and real-world application of consciousness and healing practices. As a clinical psychologist as well as a research scientist in the fields of psychoneuroimmunology and integrative medicine for over a decade, Chamonix formed CHI through a deep understanding that major systemic transformations, which will place healing at the center of medicine and scientific inquiry, will most rapidly occur through a networked approach that fosters collaboration and innovation among key stakeholders. Chamonix is a renaissance woman. She's an old friend. We were at the same lab and at different times, and she guides us in this interview into her fascinating work with CHI and the world of evidence-based biofield therapies, helping us to understand how energy healing techniques, for example, are finding their way back into modern healthcare. Always a joy to talk with Chamonix. Looking forward to it. Hope you enjoy.
All right, welcome back to the Modern Spirit Podcast. I'm here with my old friend, Chamonix Jain, PhD, extraordinary human being, basically clinician, scientist, musician. The list goes on and on. Now you have your nonprofit and all that. I'm gonna ask you to introduce yourself a little bit, Chamonix. Tell us what you're up to right now. I'll have some of your background in the intro, but what are you doing now?
Thanks, Joe. Well, as you know, the Consciousness and Healing Initiative has been my labor of love, not just me, but many of us. It's a collaborative accelerator, nonprofit organization to lead humanity to heal ourselves. And over the past year or so, we've been engaged in a really deep process that we called systems mapping for healing evolution. We're really trying to see, how do we scale healing? You know, what do we know? What are the major levers that we need to kind of push, if you will? What are the barriers? How do we really move this field forward so that we can bring healing to humanity, both through healthcare and self-care? So we've been pretty deeply engaged in that in the nonprofit. And then for me personally, I'm writing my first book, which will be out with Sounds True in 2021, called Healing Ourselves, Biofield Science and the Future of Medicine. So that book is really an offering to, you know, kind of help bridge what we know about consciousness, healing from indigenous perspectives and modern perspectives, all the way to the biofield. So we talk about mind-body practices and placebo and these aspects, but I'm also kind of diving into this area of biofield science, which, you know, I'm very passionate about. Yes. And I've done a lot of research in, and a lot of the focus of our nonprofit is in that area. So we're kind of going from head to toe in terms of exploring healing in the book. And then there's a separate section that's all about, you know, the healing path, basically. What are some key things that we can do to augment our healing now? So, Yeah, that's kind of what's up for me these days.
So let's fill the people in a little bit on, so we'll start with the biofield, just to touch, you know, when I met you, you were in your, you know, your program, your doctoral program to do your research, which at Paul Mills' lab, which I ended up joining the lab, and we had that event in common. Paul's going to be on the podcast soon enough, but you were doing, you know, what I, you know, the quick and, like, you know, the layman me's my observation, a study of the way energy healing was affecting breast cancer survivors, and looking at it in, you know, a few different ways, like the person's subjective experience, but also looking at biomarkers related to that. So can you tell us a little bit about that and just kind of introduce us to the biofield?
You bet. So for those who haven't heard the term, first of all, biofield is, you know, kind of described by scientists today as the field of energy and information interacting and interpenetrating fields of energy and information that guide our health. So when we talk about the biofield, we can talk about parts that are measurable, like our heart and our brain and, you know, other aspects of the body that we measure electromagnetically, and they tell us about our state of health, right? Mm-hmm. So that's part of the biofield. And then there's the subtle energy aspects that are much more difficult to measure and haven't been measured reliably to date, but that are talked about in basically every indigenous healing tradition. So whether we call it prana, chi, ki, or other terms, it's an understanding that there is a vital life force that helps to guide our healing process. You know, in the Western world, we sometimes call that process salutogenesis. But that vital life energy, or that subtle energy, as some people call it here, is something that's been used by healers of, you know, many different traditions for millennia. And it's not just part of what we call energy healing, but it's part of acupuncture, it's part of meditation, it's part of yoga, qigong, and whatever. But a great way to study it is, of course, by studying energy healers, because there's no needle, there's no stretching, there's no way to explain away the energy aspects of it. At least it's not that easy. But one of the key questions, of course, is, well, what about placebo? You know, first of all, we can get into that if you want. You know, I'm very passionate about placebo, and I call placebo heal. Placebo is holistic elements that activate life force, because basically they're fundamental aspects of both therapeutic clinical connection and mind and emotion and intention sets that help guide us towards a healing response. And that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about pharmaceutical medicine. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about surgery or what we call complementary medicine in this country. So a key question has always been, well, this energy healing stuff, isn't it just always just in our mind, and isn't it just placebo? So at UCSD, we did our first and sadly only study in energy healing, which was examining energy healing for fatigue breast cancer survivors. So we started addressing basically these questions of placebo. It was a randomized placebo-controlled trial to look at energy healing for cancer-related fatigue. Joe, you're a doctor. You know very well that fatigue is like the number one complaint among cancer survivors and cancer patients. And at that time, especially, nothing was really being done for fatigue other than, you know, sometimes doctors prescribing SSRIs to patients. So we really wanted to address the problem clinically, and we had a sense that energy healing would help boost vital energy and decrease toxicity. So that was our hypothesis. Anyway, so from this randomized controlled trial, which is published in the journal Cancer, it was published several years ago now, what we found essentially with this randomized placebo-controlled trial was that energy healing significantly reduced fatigue for these fatigue breast cancer survivors down to normative levels of what you would expect for the general person walking down the street. So this is 8 sessions over a month's period of 1-hour sessions where women are laying down basically receiving healing. So the women who received the mock treatment, our mock healers, were actually skeptical scientists who didn't practice energy healing, didn't meditate, didn't do yoga, but were active physically in good shape, good health, right? They did the same hand positions, and all the sessions are in silence. And we found for those women who received that kind of what we call touch alone, of course, they didn't know, right? They thought they were, you know, maybe getting the healing. We checked actually to find out what they thought they were getting. For women who received what we call the mock healing or the touch alone, they had some decrease in fatigue as well, but not as much. What was really quite fascinating about the study was that it was only the energy healing group that showed changes in diurnal rhythms of cortisol. So that is cortisol rhythms throughout the day. And this is really important because those cortisol rhythms throughout the day for fatigue breast cancer survivors have been found to be linked to levels of fatigue as well as depression. And in one study, mortality. So there's something about the dysregulation of cortisol for these survivors that is really clinically important. And, you know, when I say we did a randomized placebo-controlled trial, we not only had like the 3 groups of a waitlist control that got nothing, the women that were assigned to the mock healing, which we called touch alone, and of course they didn't know if they were getting healing or touch at the time, and then the women who got what we called the verum energy healing, which was basically energy healing from a trained healer, right? We had 4 of those trained healers in the study. We had 4 mock therapists as well. That wasn't just the placebo aspect. We also actually measured after each session what these women thought they were getting, whether they thought they were getting touch or whether they thought they were getting some measure kind of expectations, as well as how friendly they thought their practitioner was, how connected they were, how much they felt the treatment was helping them. So all these placebo factors of relationship, expectation, you know, these different nuances of placebo, we actually put that into our analysis to see if those would explain the results. And with cortisol and fatigue, actually, they didn't. It wasn't about how friendly the practitioner was. It wasn't about how connected you were. It wasn't any of that. There was something about the energy healing that actually moved the physiology. And to date, we still don't really understand that, but I will say there's some really exciting research that's going on now by one of my colleagues, Lorenza Cohen at MD Anderson Cancer Center, who's been following up on energy healing and cancer tumors in a mouse model of cancer. He's just about to publish his second paper on this with a healer named Sean Haribans. And Lorenzo is replicating some work and extending some work that was also done by Gloria Gronowicz, also looking at energy healing in mouse models of cancer. And in both of these cases, you're seeing changes in inflammatory markers. You're seeing some really nuanced downstream changes in signaling. And in Lorenzo's case,
energy healing on the mice.
Yes, and under very controlled conditions. So, and in Lorenzo's case, he actually already has a paper showing that this energy healing can reduce tumor size. So when we're talking about energy healing affecting physiology, we can talk about that in people, but then we can also start getting into the nuances of how does this work? And of course, for most people, the animal and cell work is very interesting because then you're really, most people would say, you're getting beyond placebo. I think it depends on how you define placebo, quite frankly, but the point is, you know,
but
here
the
you're
human,
saying
these, yeah. the expectations part of it.
I got to tell you, so Lorenzo did a webinar for CHI, which is, you know, on our website at the Consciousness and Healing Initiative's website. And he actually showed a very compelling video where he had Sean come to the cage. Okay. So Sean is coming to the cage more than once, right? The healer, he's coming to the cage more than once. And, you know, this has to do with how we believe animals, you know, are sentient or not sentient,
right.
You know, and what we think placebo is. So when Sean would come to the mice, you know, in their clear cage, they would run to the front. And Lorenzo has video showing this, where Sean is in the front of the cage and their mice are literally all crowding around in front of him, trying to get as close to him as possible because they know they're about to get a healing.
Mm-hmm.
No joke. Okay. That's conditioning. All right.
That's part of placebo,
by the way. But if Lorenzo or another team member would go and do the same thing, the mice wouldn't come.
Right.
So this is very, you know, there's so many nuances to this work. But the reason why we're so passionate about it is because we really believe that the biofield is a bridge for us to understand the relationship of the spiritual dimension of healing with the physical dimension of healing. And this is not new, okay? This has been talked about in all indigenous cultures. The biofield is the energetic, bioenergetic bridge that connects the spirit with the physical body.
Right. And that's been, you know, I also drew upon the same. I mean, you were a big influence, for example, when we did a presentation. Paul came down to Columbia and with me, and, you know, he presented some of his work, but you presented your study at the time, you know, in front of one of the Shipibo healers. It was a pretty sophisticated guy, and he really, like, tuned in to this data, looking at the cortisol cycle rhythm. And seeing that, and it was and talking to him and him observing your work, he said, "That's what we're doing, Joe. That's what the shamanism is doing. That's the level that your presentation of your work in Colombia to the healer, to a mixed group of people in Colombia, and that moment was really what turned me on to start going down that road with, you know, with what my book is and everything with the psychoneuroendocrine immunologic network being, you know, how I presented in my book was like, well, this is the emotional body. Like,
mm-hmm.
So in other
yeah,
words, yeah. So it's like we have, so there's the mind body pair, but then there's the emotion to the energy pair or like you're saying, the energy to the physiology.
Mm-hmm.
But where do we see that physiology respond? And then an interesting area is, you know, emotional response. And the way that with stress and trauma, you know, affecting that system and then healing affecting that system.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way I enjoyed reading your book very much. It was a beautiful book. And I remember reading about the PNIE network, as you described it, as the emotional body. And I guess my only comment to that would be, I agree that that is sort of the physical representation of the emotional body. And I think that there's even more that we could explore with this, you know, this idea, this concept of the emotional body in terms of the bioenergetic components. And, you know, of course, there are many healers that talk about the emotional body, the mental body. As you know, in the Vedic literature, they discuss these different bodies and they've been interpreted in these ways. In the Jain tradition, which, you know, I come from, is, which is Jainism, for those who don't know, is just a, it's a spiritual tradition that originated in India. Its basic tenets are ahimsa. That's its, what it's mostly known for, which is nonviolence. But the Jains really pride themselves on their metaphysics. And, you know, and they actually have a very clear way of describing the different subtle bodies as well, which to some degree do map onto the Vedic descriptions, but they talk about bhav or bhava, B-H-A-V-A, as the emotional body. And they say that this is carried in what we sometimes will call the aura. So a person who has really developed a keen sense of subtle awareness and what some people in the West might call psychic ability can actually see the emotions bioenergetically as colors in the biofield. And one of the missing links that we're still needing to explore is, how does my subtle awareness of my emotions translate into shifts in the endocrine system?
Yes.
That then affect my subtle body and my physical body. So the PNIE network is a way that we're exploring this on the physical, but as you know, it can still be used in a very reductionist way. It's my brain. It's the breathing. It's, you know, it's all of these things that are just in the physical. And I mean, the physical body is fantastic. You know, there's a lot of interconnection going on here. All of that is true. And we want to explore spiritual, you know, intervention and the role of spirit in the process. It's a limited framework to just focus on the physical.
Well, it's simply like that dimension of it. And that's how I like was into it. It's just like, in other words, to demonstrate the effectiveness of the energy healers in your study, you know, the cortisol rhythm was the physical mechanism element that help people to relate and to, you know, to basically to publish the results and say, oh, wow, there's something there. So it's simply like, it's not an over-focus on it. At least I see how people would do that, but I think it's like the gateway, you know, is how I think about it. It's like, okay, you have this PNEI network as a, because then I want to get back to your, like, you know, what we were kind of hinting at is like, okay, well, how do we scale healing? You know? Mm-hmm. So in other words, that would be, that's how I presented it, for example, and it comes back to with the breast cancer survivor stuff. You know, at the end of my book, I said, well, if you're a doctor and you have this patient that's presenting with these problems and you've screened out all the major, you know, issues and you don't really know, but what you do see is, you know, dysfunction and multiple elements of the PNEI network.
Yeah.
You know, psychological, autonomic, inflammatory, endocrine. Then, like, my point is, you may need to consider, like, an energetic approach. You may need to consider a healer, because this is the kind of problem that is lends itself to that kind of intervention. And we've identified where the material, so then the PNEI network becomes a window. And as I say, you know, spiritual well-being manifests in emotional health.
Mm-hmm.
And so then PNEI network dysfunction could indicate, you know, so something. So that's the point of it, is that eventually you're getting back to, so, you know, the biofield, you know, what is the PNEI network's relationship to the biofield, I guess is the question.
So that's the key, you know, wonderful million-dollar, billion-dollar question or whatever. But you said some really key things here, Joe, that I think are great to explore in terms of the promise of the field of biofield science. Currently, we have to look at the physical shifts in the body to determine potential, you know, disease trajectories, you know, and all of these things. And yet, I think as clinicians, and certainly there's now evidence now with PNI to support how emotional health affects physical health. So we know that. That's no longer controversy, right? 50 right. years ago, that was crazy. The right. idea that your emotions affected your physical body was crazy, right? Now we know much better. We know that that's true.
Yeah.
So imagine now that we can go up one more level into the biofield And we're able to detect those patternings in the energetic field, in the bioelectromagnetic field that's associated with our thoughts and emotions, so that we can detect disease before it manifests into the physical body. This is one of the major, you know, billion-dollar contributions, if you want to call it that way, of biofield science to the medical field. Because if what we're seeing has some validity, and based on, you know, the handful, and I will call it the handful, there's so much more investment that needs to happen in biofield science research. But with studies like Lorenzo's and the randomized controlled clinical trials that I've done and that Susan Lukendorf has done at the University of Iowa and others, there's enough of a there that we recognize that we must very much look deeply at this extension. I would call it the extension of psychoneuroimmunology into biofield science, looking at the bioelectromagnetic, you know, effects on the physiology, on the PNIE network. And this isn't just crazy. I mean, look at Mike Levin's work, for example. I don't know if you're familiar with Mike Levin's work at Tufts University. You should have him as a guest too. He's fantastic.
Okay, good.
Among many things that Mike is doing, Mike has been growing planaria with like 3 heads and 10 tails and all these things for a long time. He's been, you know, very involved in and a leader in regenerative medicine.
Right.
And he's shown, for example, that you can manipulate voltage gradients across cell membranes and regenerate and create new neural tissue. Okay. That's a biofield effect.
Yeah. There's that book, Electric. That's not him, is it? There's a book I got a long time ago, but I still have it. It was just on my desk the other day. But it's a biofield, it's electrical, you know, it was focused on electric, and it was all the planarians and also, you know, like, you know, it's been a big issue in medicine around non-union fractures, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. when bones don't heal well together, then starting to put a current through it to get them to heal. So, I mean, that's kind of how it's starting to show up. And there's a lot of stimulators and things that are being used here and there. It's not quite as sophisticated.
One of the things that we did for the community in this deep dive systems mapping that I mentioned, if people go to reportonhealing.com, we created a little URL that's easy to remember. It's just reportonhealing.com. It'll take you to the 83-page report that we did that and a huge, massive map, you know, of the system. But also it has some really cool resources, including a whole database of subtle energy technologies that are out there. And it's really just sort of like, who's out there and what are their claims? And we will say there are a lot of claims being made without evidence. So there's a more established kind of bioelectromagnetic medicine field, somewhat more established, Joe, as you know, and that's, you know, pulse electromagnetic field stimulation and, you know, other types of bioelectromagnetic devices that are being used for wound healing, for pain and other things. So there's all of that. And then there's what we call even the Wilder West, which is all subtle energy technologies that aren't well understood at all, but are being marketed like crazy, right? And people don't know, like, does this stuff work? What's out there? You know, but it's getting sold because it can be sold under FDA wellness guidelines without clinical trials.
Right.
That's when you go under FDA wellness guidelines, you don't have to do clinical trials. So we just started cataloging this for the community so they can at least look at it and then make their own decisions. You know, that's just one of the things. We've also identified over 6,000 publications in biofield science, different publications. Some are thought pieces, some are randomized controlled clinical trials, some are animal studies. But just again, a way to freely share, you know, when people say there's no evidence or there's no studies, that's simply not true. We also created an infographic of nearly 400 clinical studies that have been done with energy healing therapies, which include Reiki, healing touch, therapeutic touch, energy psychology, many different ones. Again, just to give people a lay of the land, we'd like to do what, you know, Joe, is called a systematic review, where we can really compile the evidence from all of these studies in a systematic way and make evaluations. Are these therapies really overall effective for pain, effective for trauma? Eyeballing the data, it certainly seems like there's effectiveness, but that data needs to be synthesized. So that's one of our key next steps that we're actually fundraising for.
Okay, that's fantastic. So, but then there's these two, you know, we've kind of discussed these two areas of the, you know, the subtle energy machines, mm-hmm. you know, versus the healer, right? The individual that you studied in your first research, and then this is what sounds like what Lorenzo and those guys are working on, is like the person that has the mystery of how to deal with these subtle energies from a technological approach you know, that they're, mm-hmm. I guess we're getting somewhere or we're learning, they're trying it. People are coming up with these machines. So I guess in my mind, those machines would be guided by somebody's like biofield intuition. In other words, how it matches up with life itself is probably determined by someone who has developed themselves in that way to be able to do this. So I guess is that discussed? Is that like a separate, are those categories mm-hmm. in biofield?
It's such a key thing that you just said, because one of the other directions that we propose in our roadmap for systems change is deep collaboration with healing practitioners, scientists, and engineers, right? To be able to develop devices to both detect and work with the biofield for healing. So they're always going to be human healers. I don't think that devices are necessarily going to replace human healers, but if we even want to think about developing devices, you're absolutely right, Joe. We can't do this without people who actually do that, right? Who actually know about it. And it's not just a question of sticking electrodes all over their bodies and measuring the electromagnetic readouts. I mean, that's kind of the state of where things are generally, you know, even with this particular situation that I told you about at MD Anderson, of course, initially, as I understand it, there was interest in studying this healer and trying to understand the nature of his emanations and see if that could be replicated into a device. And I'm not sure that that's the thrust of their focus now. There's so little that we know that, quite frankly, the only way that we're going to be able to develop, I think, effective devices that could potentially mimic some aspect of what a healer is doing is only by working with the healers and deeply listening to them, not just thinking that, you know, because you know, Joe, in academia, how it could be.
Yeah.
Sometimes we scientists think we know everything, right? And it's like we got to kind of humble ourselves and listen to what the healers are saying and, you know, and what their experience is if we really want to innovate.
Well, that's what, you know, we had that webinar thing a while back, and I was just saying how, you know, those things, those kind of subtle energy, intuitive kind of art forms, that's a different kind of study. It's not books and papers and computers. And so you may be very advanced with books and papers and computers, but unless you really pursue that line of study further, it's going to be hard for you to really appreciate, you know. With, in other words, and I use the example, it's like if it's basketball, you know, I'm going to want to learn from somebody that's really good at basketball, not just somebody that studies basketball. And the person that studies basketball really doesn't know about basketball the way that other person does. And it's just different paths of knowledge and learning. And so but that's what you're working on is, I mean, there is a point at which there just has to be a respect, you know, to do the research on, and I know you do, to do the research on this stuff, and you want to find out, we want to see the physical aspects of it that can be measured and scaled, like everything you're talking about. And also allowing for the mysterious part of it to be there.
I think honoring the spiritual aspects of the practice in general is a really great contribution that biofield science research can make. I think other fields have had the opportunity, but haven't necessarily, I'll just be honest, this is just my opinion. You know, I think that other fields have had the opportunities, even in the entheogen world, to really explore the spiritual aspects of the experience.
I mean, you're way further. Yeah, no, you're way more bold.
For me personally, when you're talking to a healer, as you know, Joey, and we've had deep discussions, and again, I just want to say I'm delighted to hear what the Shipibo shaman said about our energy healing study, you know, on the effects on the endocrine system, and said this is what we're doing, because this is it. Like, actually, if you talk to healers across the globe from different traditions, and you ask them, how does this work, they will say, I am realigning this person with, whether they call it God, their spirit, their soul, right? That spiritual realignment of the person's ego personality with their spiritual self, however you want to describe that, consciousness, Atman, Brahma, whatever, okay? That's the heart of it.
Yes.
That's the heart of it. And then we have all these names and these concepts and all these other ways that we try to describe it, but we're not getting to the core aspect of what healing is. And you know, quite frankly, I think it's crazy making to me personally that as scientists, we're afraid to go there. Like, why don't we just go to the power of the spirit? That is what all of this research is calling us to do, whether it's in contemplative practice, entheogen practice, energy healing practice. And so this is what it means to give healers voice, is to have, you know, our indigenous leaders and healers speak about how it works from their perspective without having to worry about whether they're moving some biomarker. We move a biomarker, great, it gives us some information. It's not like we have to prove that it's real by showing that it moves a biomarker.
Well, for some people, they want that because it's like you have this situation where you have a lot of people really traumatized by religion, you know? So you have this like science community that a lot of them are coming out of like a traumatized attitude towards religion. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to talk about it. You know, it's more than just their like school of thought. It's an emotional response that's rooted in trauma, in my experience. Like they just don't know. So then what we're trying to do is find like some more universal, you know, ways to, like when you're talking biofield, you know, biofield would be a universal concept. In other words, you don't have to believe in this or that. We're talking about something that everyone is experiencing. So the biomarkers and all that stuff, it helps people. Obviously, they eventually just need to recognize, okay, their connection to everything, to life itself. But on the way there, the culture, yeah, is very resistant for many, many reasons. So I think that
Do we keep catering to that, or
you have to do both.
You can't cater to somebody's trauma. You have to help them heal it. If we want science to progress, we can't. Yeah. We can't be slaves to, you know, kind of egoic driven agendas. That's not how science is done. Science is about discovery, and science is about freedom of discovery. So there has to be room for all of it, no matter what somebody's personal agendas or traumas are. And you know, I know I'm saying that kind of in a rough way. I am a clinical psychologist, so I get it. Yeah. I understand. And I also think that, you know, when you're working with a client, you don't cater to their traumas. You help them heal it.
Yeah. No, it's very important. And I agree. And you're right. Like, for example, I speak out in the entheogen community about the lack of that, you know. So I just gave a talk on YouTube, Spiritual Healing Loves Science. So my point was, because it was from this going around with a Native American friend of mine, Belinda, to these different conferences. And then she said that. She said, how come spirit is always trying to catch up to science? Like, that's the whole problem. That's why the culture screwed up. Like, spirit first. So then that was the nature of my talk. What I was saying, you know, if we start in spiritual discussion and context, then we don't have to leave anything out. You know, the other way, if we start on the science side and try to work our way through, then we're like, oh, well, what do we do with that? That doesn't fit anymore, and that doesn't fit anymore. But if we are able to talk about things from a more universal kind of context, then we don't have to leave anything out.
Yeah. It's that universal language that's key. I mean, that's one of the key things that we identified in our systems, you know, process, is coming up with a clear taxonomy, right? Coming up with clear language to describe what that is. Joe, like you said, in a way that doesn't alienate anyone, but also speaks the truth of what we're hearing. So that's really super key. And I dare say when we are able to come to that common language, what we're going to see is a much deeper and broader evolution of science that's able to solve greater problems, because it's not being run by fear and egoic energies. It's not really being run by, you know, just that sort of consciousness, but it's driven by a bigger consciousness. And if you, you know, we can look at the history is replete with examples of brilliant scientists who are very, very spiritually connected. And, you know, ideas don't come from our egos. Ideas come from a wider place, a wider consciousness.
Yeah, it's building. I mean, I think, you know, it's unfortunate that the resistance or whatever, that all this argument had to be built out. Like, you know, as you mentioned, you said 50 years ago, you know, this was crazy, but 100 years ago, it wasn't crazy. You know, it was obvious and it's common sense. You know, that our emotional state affects our health, and that the placebo and, you know, people's attitudes and the biofield itself, you know, I think is something that was much more commonly kind of discussed. And it was only within recent times, I think, that it's really been challenged. And in one, you know, one reason was, or one excuse was, to overcome charlatanism. You know, a lot of people making claims and manipulating people. So, oh, we want the science, we want the universal kind of evidence, language and evidence.
Yeah.
So then those 50 years, you mentioned all these studies, and there it is. There's the data, there's the research. So now that is, like you said, it's not appropriate to say there is no data. There is. And so now you can speak more and more freely. It's too bad that it has taken this long, but I think it is happening now.
It's definitely much more, we get much greater, I think, respect and interest in biofield science than we ever have. And part of that is, you know, just with any system, to move forward in a systems-based way, it requires collaboration, coherence, communication across various stakeholders, you know, kind of getting everybody on board and being strategic and synergistic in the research that's being done. So I would say there's still a lot to do with respect to that. When we have groundbreaking studies like Lorenzo's and others, you have to kind of also wonder why some of those studies are not included in Nature or Science, you know, but still find themselves in complementary medicine journals. So there's still, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, we've already talked about kind of basically what is the materialist bias in science,
yeah. Right?
That we have a materialist bias in science, and it is a bias. So we have to continue to address that. And, you know, we will. I mean, the world is waking up to how important emotional health is, you know, to our world, to our society, to our physical bodies. So, you know, it's steps, right? It's steps. So first we have to kind of get everyone on board with how important emotional health is, and then we can deepen, you know, into subtle awareness and the role of the spiritual as part of the process.
That's right. And that's, so I think that, you know, and I'm not talking about catering to their traumas, but to initiate the discussion to help people understand that sometimes when we see this overly materialistic perspective, it indicates a lack of emotional health. So it's not that we're catering to their trauma. We're just saying, oh, look here, like mm-hmm. this kind of materialistic arrogance. Ooh, this person maybe is not quite like, is probably dealing with a few things that are too, makes it a little too painful for them, you know, to look inward, or they haven't had. That's why I think it's important, like emotional health and talking about emotional health and being able to talk about how, you know, what I find from like, you know, spiritual healing and that kind of stuff is like, okay, you have a sacred space that is beyond judgment, where people can be vulnerable. Like that's really some of the crucial elements.
Yeah.
So I could say, oh, wow, look at this person, so hung up on materialism. I can tell they've never really been vulnerable. No one's facilitated their vulnerability in an effective way.
Mm.
So that's why it's important to bring those kind of elements to the discussion. And it's also a compassion, you know, but it's like, but it's also a truth. And we say, well, look here, you know, oh, this is little signs of this. We got this, you know, when we see this kind of overly materialistic pursuits to ease people's emotional discomfort, i.e., you know, addiction to food or substance or whatever. I mean, that says, or consumerism, you know, or gambling or money, you know, or sex. It's like we know what we're looking at. You know, and so when you have this overly materialistic perspective that doesn't really want to get into the subtle discussion, you know, it.
Well, we're also, you know, we're not necessarily been made aware, right, of our own power. I mean, I think that's really the key. All of the research that, you know, we're exploring and doing, and all of the education that we're forwarding with the Consciousness and Healing Initiative, our main aim is to lead humanity to heal ourselves, which means to recognize our own power and agency in healing. But if we have been told that we're broken, that something outside of us is the only thing that can fix us because we're not powerful enough to fix ourselves from the inside out, then we're gonna, you know, we're gonna reach to materialism. It's what we know. You know, I get sick, I need a physical medicine. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Maybe there are other ways as well, right? Maybe I haven't been told that if I change my diet, I can change my physiology. You know, maybe I haven't been told that if I can deeply feel the subtle sensations in my body, I can tune into what's going on with me emotionally before I do something that I regret, right? So there, it's just it's a learning process.
Yeah. Right? Oh, so that's a big part of the educational front, you know, is helping people to, yeah, you're saying that they haven't had access to that opportunity or that possibility, or they haven't been taught that way.
I mean, we've been disempowered. If you want to just say it a little bit more strongly, I think that, you know, we have disempowered ourselves as human beings to think that we have no control over our lives, no control over our health, no control over our minds.
Yeah.
It's simply not true. So especially when we look at this data, we can see that that's not true. And, you know, how much power and potential do we actually have as conscious human beings on our health and the health of others. When we're looking at the effects of energy healers that are being conduits for grace, or, you know, you could say channeling the currents of compassion, or however you want to describe the healing process, that's, you know, that's part of our potential. That's part of our birthright to be able to heal ourselves and others.
It is. But I think it's like, you know, the interesting thing is you still, when the disempowerment has happened, you're saying at the highest levels, right? On the review boards of this nature, you've got a good bunch of people there who are disempowered, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what I'm calling out. It's like these people, that culture of this high-end academic culture is the culture that is not, that's what I'm saying, they have not been held in that vulnerability to receive this current of compassion into their lives in a way that would alter, you know, the way they're talking about these things.
It's also about values, right? It's kind of like, who and what are you serving?
Yeah.
Right. And we see that in systems, like, you know, what each system is serving some kind of core value. Each person is, each system is. So when we look at these systems that we've created, what values are they serving? Right. And we're looking at that right now with systematic oppression. Right. So that's a huge issue in our society today. Right. Systematic racism, its effects on health for minority communities. It's the same sort of thing. Why were these systems created? What values are they truly serving? And what values do we want to serve?
Yeah.
You know, what values do we want to lead from in society when we're creating or modifying the systems that we have?
Well, and then like along the same lines of what I've been saying is like, and what is it that brings people to value certain things? In other words, when people value money over humanity, you know, that is, there's a story there, you know. It's mm-hmm. if that person is, you know, so many times we see it, I don't know, where somebody who is coming from that kind of perspective goes through some kind of healing process, has the opportunity to develop themselves and learn these things, become empowered over their own health and realize, oh my God, I don't need to be doing that. I don't want to be doing that. That's very mm-hmm. common, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just think there's also that step. It's like, It's just mixed in there. It is, there's different values behind these different activities. So we could say, oh yeah, obviously it's the profit motive that is driving, you know, systemic racism. Like that's, to me, it's very clear.
Well, and it's not even a profit motive. I would say it's just greed. It's like just a limited understanding of the nature of self and interdependence. And I think, again, you know, when we bring these indigenous leaders more to the forefront so they can explain the principles, their cosmology, how they see the world, you know, literally how the world works from their consciousness. When we're working from principles of interdependence, then our values shift, right? When we actually physically, emotionally, spiritually experience interdependence and that you and I are not separate, then I don't create systems of oppression to separate you and me.
Yeah.
Your suffering is my suffering, right?
Yeah.
So, and your joy is my joy. So that's like a totally different framework. So the more that we can bring our indigenous healers and spiritual leaders and, you know, those who really vibrate those principles, those spiritual principles, the more our systems will shift.
Well, and that seems to be happening. You know, I think there's definitely a degree of that those values have spread more than we thought. And you're seeing that in the response, you know, and I feel like there has been a turning point of people returning, you know, the internet plays a role in people's access to information and all that stuff, but a turning point in the people who are trying to, the number of people, let's say, within the United States who are working on returning to those values that you're talking about, like I would say to origin, to nature, to the biofield, you know, the people that are really trying to get at the heart of that, the biofield experience, I'll just use that term, over like, you know, things that are just overly politicized and like, this is just baggage from all this other stuff. This is not,
exactly.
This is not origin.
Yeah.
This is not life. This is not life on earth. And so I think there's just, it has to be said, like there's just really a lot of more people than there has been in a long time around here focusing that way. And I think that is what's brought this, you're seeing the shift happening, you know. I think, I really believe that there's a, you can see a lot more biofield consciousness happening again from all these different perspectives, whether it's their through their flow state exercise optimization.
It's experience-based,
right? Experience-based. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So people are seeking that experience because they are seeing through the, you know, just the health limitations of the other, you know, that you, your experience is not that healthy if you just stay in this other way.
Yeah. Yeah. Health is a huge driver. There's no question.
Health is the driver. I think health is the driver.
And now we're seeing it, you know, not just personally, but societally. So, and I think we're speaking of interdependence. I think we all, you know, are deeply experiencing the nature of interdependence with the different situations that we have going on right now, whether it's COVID, whether it's, you know, systematic oppression. We are definitely feeling each other's pain and sharing experiences of, you know, shared pain and hopefully somewhat joy in ways that we have never done. So in the history of my lifetime, anyway, I mean, certainly these things have happened over history, right? They've happened and they happen in cycles, but it's what a beautiful wake up call it is in a way for us to explore, like how much can we expand our consciousness and create the world that we really want to live in? Because we're creating it, right? Our consciousness is creating it and we're all a part of it, which means that we all have the power to shift it.
Yeah. I think there's been a huge kind of communal experience with the COVID, for example, you know, globally, that has really, I just don't think that it's going to just wash away. You know, I don't sense that, you know, when people talk about,
I think we have been fundamentally shifted.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree that there's been a fundamental shift. So we have just a few more minutes, maybe, Shami. I know you probably have to go, but just a little bit more of your time because we started a little bit late. But just so we covered a lot of interesting things. So I want to hear what she has coming up. You know, what are the next things that she's coming up? And that's one thing I want to hear. I'd also like to hear, like, so we heard about Lorenzo's work. What's another, you know, research concept that you're excited about right now?
Yeah, you bet.
And anything else you'd like to share? And then eventually I'm going to bring it up, but I just think it's so important and I think it makes the difference. And you and your, what you contribute is just also that you're an artist, you know, a musician, a singer, and I want people to know, to check you out on, because I love Joni Mitchell. So Shami's singing Joni Mitchell now, which has got to be awesome.
Thank you.
I knew Shami Iron Maiden. So it's pretty awesome.
Yes, we've gone from Iron Maiden to Joni Mitchell. So and actually, I guess that that's a reflection of a desire to live, you know, a full life and experience all of it, right? So I'm very grateful to sing. I love to sing. And actually on that front, you know, some of the things that we're exploring with the Consciousness and Healing Initiative is sound. That's actually what brought me to study energy healing, was because as a young singer, I recognized the power of sound in my body at a very early age, and personally explore that through mantra meditation practice. And that continues to grow inside me. I do some teaching. Most of my teaching gigs, like most people, have disappeared in 2020. So I lost a lot of really good gigs at like Sivananda Ashram in the Bahamas and Brazil and 1440. But I just talked to the folks at Esalen, and I think I'm going to keep that one. That's going to be in September. So I'm going to be teaching on the Well of Being at Esalen in September for anybody who might want to come and join us. They are definitely taking precautions for COVID, and it would be lovely for us to get physically together. And that particular workshop really dives into both the science of well-being, but also the practice, and links it with the energy body. So here we explore hedonic well-being, eudaimonic well-being, which is kind of values and connection, hedonic well-being being, you know, the experience of pleasure and emotion, and then non-dual well-being. And so we link that kind of through a chakra process. And so that's what I'll be teaching at Esalen. Super excited about that. And we're exploring sound healing. It's one of our newest projects that we're doing, kind of a small study, a feasibility study with a very talented healer and her and, you know, kind of her teachers. So we're exploring that for stress and anxiety during COVID, because again, you know, we're trying to do studies that are, you know, are needed and, you know, that could help people during times where we're all experiencing collective suffering. So we're excited about that, to just sort of explore the sound aspects of the biofield and how that might be used to alleviate emotional pain. And then, as I said, you know, this big thing, I really encourage everyone to go to reportonhealing.com and our website generally, which is chi.is, chi.is. So www.chi.is. We have ongoing webinars every month with luminaries in the field, both practice luminaries in contemplative science and biofield science, contemplative practice, energy healing practice. So those are free to the community every first Friday. And then the Report on Healing is just really an incredible resource for anyone who wants to learn more about subtle energy and biofield healing. It's written in a super friendly way for those who don't have time to read an 83-page report, although I will say it's very readable. We have a short summary of about 10 pages. And this is also for those of you who are doing energy healing work or similar types of work, and people around you may not understand it, or you're trying to scale it in your clinic or something like that. This is a resource for you to basically give to anybody who is interested in this. It's meant for anyone, and it's very well referenced. And as I said, there's links to all kinds of databases that are also very cool. We're also just about to put up, I think today, a roadmap for systems change. So what we did is we did this report, we synthesized all these perspectives from community, policy, education, research, technology, and we identified what are the main things we need to do. And then the roadmap for systems change is actually like, okay, here's the plan. Here's the plan. Here are the initiatives. Who wants to help? And so that's kind of what we're doing now, Joe, is we're gathering community. We've got a number of different people and organizations that are excited to help co-lead this. It is a collaboration. The Consciousness and Healing Initiative is a collaborative. We're not just a standalone institute. We're not interested in that. We're interested in fostering collaborations and community. So we're getting, you know, in the next year, we're going to see a lot of growth in those areas. And we're really excited to put forth some education and kind of share what we've learned more broadly with the community, have Indigenous healers and our healing luminaries kind of share practices that are helpful for everybody, and also share some of this cutting edge science, you know, and in fun ways through educational courses and things like that. So, you know, a lot of fun stuff going on, and I encourage everybody to kind of link in to chi.is to learn more about the nonprofit. And I have my own website too, which is just my first and last name, shamanijan.com, which has a ton of like different videos, TED Talks, other talks, you know, meditations, different things if people want to explore.
Mm, wow. Amazing, Shamani. It's pretty awesome. The Shamanator still doing it. It's pretty awesome. No, it's beautiful, your body of work and what you're contributing. And I think it is all very important, very useful, and very timely. You know, this is just seeing you doing what you're doing. It's funny, I was talking to, you know, our friend Rael's on the podcast. And when he came to medical school around that time, and he wanted to do meditation research. And it seemed kind of like, you know, unlikely, but then now more and more and more, like all that's just being ahead of your time, and now your time has come, it seems to me, Shamani. So I'm really happy.
Well, same with you, Joe. I'm so deeply grateful for your work and all of the contributions that you've done. Your book is fantastic. I can't wait for your next one, and I'm super excited to, you know, see where everything goes with this new exciting epigenetic study that you're doing.
Wow.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Well, real quick, and then just your book. Sounds true. So your book is going to be, it's already like, it's just being finished,
yes.
Or what's going on there, kind of?
It's a little delayed because, as you can tell,
yeah.
I've been very busy.
Yeah.
Sounds true is being very, very kind to me, but I am committed to it. It's almost finished in terms of the writing, and we need a little time for the publication process. So it will be out next year.
Okay.
My guess is kind of towards the summer of next year in 2021, Healing Ourselves, Biofield Science and the Future of Medicine. And it's very lay friendly, and it's definitely going to have guided practice in it as well.
Okay,
as
that's
science.
Good. The experiential component seems
for sure.
Like
yeah.
The next level of,
yeah.
That's, of education, right? What we were just talking about.
It's vital, pardon the pun. Yeah.
Ah. All right, good, Shamani. Well, I'm going to wrap it up there for this episode. Thank you so much. It's been great to have you on.
Thanks, Joe. It was a pleasure.
Thank you once again for joining us for the Modern Spirit Podcast. New episodes are on the way. Learn more about our work at modernspirit.org. Our research project, the Modern Spirit Epigenetics Project, continues. We still are looking for more support. Please consider donating through our crowdfund and visit us at modernspirit.org.